Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Clown Hour. This is your man, Scott Burst, your head clown himself. I'm the creator of the Clown Times blog, sports blog. You can find us on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. That's clown with a K, by the way. And you can just find us on Facebook. Just do a little search for the Clown Times. You'll find us there. We have a special treat tonight. We'll be talking the NBA Finals and the name that just won't go away, Tim Tebow. Now that he's surfaced in New England under Bill Belichick in the game. And by the way, I do call Belichick Belichick because, you know, he did cheat for all those years. But at any rate, we're going to talk all this with my man back from my A&T days. He is Dwayne Nash. He's the creator of The Yard and HBCU Sports. Dwayne, welcome to the Clown Hour.
Yes, thanks, Scott, for having me.
Oh, no worries, and thank you, my man. This has been a long time coming, you know, the two of us getting together and talking sports. I mean, we've been doing it offline for quite a minute. So I'm very excited. I know you got some insight, mad insight on both topics. But first, I want to introduce you all to Dwayne. And first of all, Dwayne, tell the listeners, all two of them, who you're from. I mean, well, I should say where you're from, where you went to school, and what got you started with The Yard and HBCU Sports.
Well, Scott, I'm a native Washingtonian, still living here, moving back to the D.C. area about 10 years ago. My interest in covering HBCU sports started actually while I was in school, just being amazed by the athletes that were there in terms of those who have come from small institutions that went on to play in, especially in the NFL, and went on to flourish. So I just felt as though that it would be great for those stories to be told, because I thought that those stories weren't being told enough and properly. I've actually been doing it since 2009, and I think your other question was, where did I attend school? I attended the great North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro, North Carolina. A member of the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference. Unfortunately, they did take a huge drubbing to Louisville. I swear, I think I still hear Ian Eagle commenting about the amount of turnovers that they had against Louisville in that game.
Man, that, you know what? At first I was proud to see A&T, you know, get past the playing game and to get to the real field of 64, if you will. But, you know, I just, like, held my head. I'm like, oh, my. You know, you run to the eventual national champion Louisville Cardinals. I'm like, oh, my. Oh, my.
Yeah, we want to do a buzz all there. I'm actually, and I'm afraid of actually saying this out loud, I really didn't watch the game. I had a feeling of what was going to happen, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad. So,
right.
Yeah, I happened to be actually out that night, but I was, of course, following the game on my cell phone app. And as the game continued to go on, the score just kept getting worse and worse. And those are my Aggies. I am proud of them. They played extremely well in the MEAC tournament. That was an extremely exciting tournament. This past season, for those who didn't get a chance to follow that tournament. If I remember correctly, no one above the fourth seed made it to the semifinals. So that was just an amazing incident that happened this past season with that. And all four teams that made it to the semifinals played extremely well in those last two rounds.
Mm-hmm. Especially the national title game, man. Dude, that was a perfect cabinet in my mind. to last year's season, you know, to 2012-2013 season. I mean, both teams, Louisville and Michigan, hell, either one of those teams deserved it, man. I mean, both played hard. Those are truly the last, the best two teams standing. Those are the true best, two best teams that year. And
I
was honored and privileged to watch that. You know, it was you know, because the score ended up in the 80s, and which was a contrast of majority of the college basketball games in the 50s and 60s. You know, I love defense as well as the next guy, but just mix a little scoring and good shooting every now and again, and that'll be all right with me.
Of course, always.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but right quick for the listeners, you know, I attended Aggie Pride. I went to Asia State undergrad, but I went to A&T for my first graduate degree, so I still feel a connection to Aggie land. So, you know, pardon me for acting the fool, but I'll always act the fool when someone brings up A&T around me. So, you know, just show them a little pride there. So, gotta get the love there.
Cool.
And by the way, Dwayne, you don't know this, but I'm going to have you on, like, during college football season, talk more about HBCU sports and
fantastic.
The sports phenomenon behind that. So everyone stay tuned for that. So I'm looking forward to that as well. So sorry that you had to find out at the last minute, but I just thought I'd throw it out there in my future plans.
there are a lot of great guys that have been picked up as undrafted free agents, along with the phenom, Teron Armstead, that was drafted by the New Orleans Saints in the third round. So there will be a lot of interesting stories that will go on during minicamp this year.
There you go. And we're going to hit that. We're going to hit that during minicamp and throughout the college football season.
Great.
So, turning to the NBA Finals, speaking of basketball, kind of, the NBA Finals, I got one question to ask you, my man. What in the hell happened to the Miami Heat last night?
Wow. You know what? I was not expecting that type of egg last night. Anyone would have told me that there would have been that big of a swing from game two to game three, I don't know if I would have believed it, especially with the way Miami looked in game two. There was no way in the world I would have believed that statement.
I mean, it seems like it's like patterns. I mean, like we're witnessing patterns. Like game two, Miami came in pissed, and they showed that they were pissed in the final score. Game three, it seemed like San Antonio got pissed back at Miami, and took it out on them to the tune of almost a 40-point win. So the question remains: will Miami come out pissed off in game four, and do we see another ass kicking?
That's a very interesting question. I always tell people you have to forgive me, especially when it comes to talking about sports, because I am the son of a statistician and I am a fan of numbers. One of the things that I find interesting, especially about LeBron James led teams in the finals, this is LeBron James has only been in the finals three times. So this is the second time that he's been in a situation where he's been down either 2-0 or 2-1.
Right.
And even in the situation where he was up 2-1, they ended up losing the series four games to two against Dallas Mavericks.
That's right.
I want to see how he responds, not only as a leader, but as an individual player as we go on for the remainder of the finals.
Yeah, and you know what they say about character. You would know once your character, once your ass is down on the ground, are you going to get back up? You know, now going back to what happened with Dallas, you know, I never witnessed that anything before like that in my life, in the sense of LeBron, just to paraphrase Skip Bayless, I'll kind of quote him actually, becoming the frozen one. You know, he was just looked shook. Dude just looked shook. I'd never seen that before. I mean, Dwayne Wade, I remember him on the sidelines just chastising LeBron, tell his boy to get with it. And LeBron is not in there. It's to say, yeah, I know. But he was, you could tell he didn't want to be out there. I mean, you know, you'd say about a professional athlete, but he didn't want to be there. He was shook. And, you know, I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for interrupting, but I'll say my statement until after you're done.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, I was just going to say that this time around, I mean, I know he's a natural distributor. He wants to get other people involved. That's just his nature. And, you know, and I get it. It's more Magic Johnson than it is Michael Jordan. I mean, I'm sure y'all was by now. But I mean, to me, in game one, he wasn't, in my mind, he wasn't aggressive enough. I mean, when you see that, to me, when he saw that Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh were not getting off their shots in game one, you know, in my mind, he should have just said, you know what, just get on my back. Let me take y'all home. I'm the four-time MVP. Let me take y'all home. But I remember him kicking out a pass with like a minute and change left in the game to Chris Bosh, who at 6'11", for some reason, was hanging out at the three-point line, you know, the three-point shot. And, you know, of course he missed it. And, you know, and that led to, you know, Tony Parker's incredible move when he almost lobbed the ball and LeBron James. That was just a spectacular move. I mean, but
fantastic move. I don't think I've seen anything in terms of that type of sequence ever in the game of basketball. And I was completely amazed by that.
I mean, Tony Parker, he may not be the best point guard in the NBA, but he's for damn sure is a star when it counts. And he basically carried him in game one. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. I mean, the way he penetrated the lane, you know, whether he kicked out to the open three-point shooters like Green killed him in game one as well. Or just came there to Tim Duncan at the elbow and, you know, or just taking it himself. You know, I mean, they could not stop Tony Parker in game one. They just had no answer for him.
True.
You know, yeah, I mean, he toasted it. I mean, he used whatever he was guarding him, like Mario Chalmers. For the most part, game one, he pretty much, you know, Chalmers was like, his nickname became Charmin for most of that game. You know, he kept getting used. So that's why. But I just want to see LeBron become the aggressive LeBron like he was a little bit in game two. I mean, what are your thoughts, man?
You know what? I find it very interesting that, especially in final situations, we see this LeBron, the aggressive LeBron, a lot during the regular season. But for whatever reason, when it comes to the playoffs, especially when it comes to the finals, he becomes he becomes less aggressive, especially further they get along in the finals. Now, I found it interesting in an interview that I heard last week. I think it was from his AAU head coach, where he said that he actually helped groom LeBron to become this more pass-first player because he knew, regardless of how great he was as an individual, they wouldn't win without the team, which I'm a huge proponent of team first, but in certain situations you have to be able to, for those teams in situations where you see that your other players aren't playing well, you have to be able to put your team on your back and say, come follow me. I mean, we've seen it happen time and again with Jordan. I've seen it happen with Magic. I've seen Kareem do it. I've seen Bird do it. I mean, we've seen all of the greats do it, that when everyone else is faltering, something in them kicks in and says, it's time. But the statement that you made about LeBron and playing against the Dallas Mavericks in the 2011 finals, I find it very interesting. Whenever you get a chance, if you haven't seen it, and listeners, if you haven't seen it either, it's on YouTube. But when you go to YouTube, do a search for Mark Cuban, Skip Bayless. It's a conversation that they have the day after the NBA Finals and LeBron wins his first title. Now, we all know how Skip Bayless feels about LeBron James. Mark Cuban basically goes on and informs Skip Bayless, along with a lot of other NBA analysts, that you guys are dumb. My two-year-old son can basically analyze a NBA game better than you can. It's not to say,
I remember that.
You know, it's not to say that LeBron is not a great player, but we just strategize our game to hopefully have LeBron play the way that he played and have the rest of the team shoot as badly as they shot in that series. You know,
right.
Don't blame all the fact that it's just LeBron or LeBron just didn't play well. Maybe we were coached well enough and we played well enough to beat them. It just seemed that everyone would scream out that the Mavs didn't win the championship that year, that the Heat lost the championship that year. So I didn't want to see if the same thing actually happens this year, because I kind of found it interesting. The one thing that I thought would happen going into the series was that Miami would have issues with the big men of San Antonio, and that hasn't been the case. It's been the guard play of Tony Parker and Danny Green and Gary Neal that have outshined the play of the Miami Heat guards.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. And I you know what? I hope the folks either listening live or listening to this in the archive podcast will do that in YouTube. Do a search for Mark Cuban, Skip Bayless, because I do remember that. The more you talk about it, the more I remember to this day. He basically took, he being Mark Cuban, he basically took Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith to some degree to school. He took them to school.
Yes, he did.
Because he basically, he basically called them out. He said basically, you know, he got tired of hearing Skip brainless that, you know, that the Heat lost the series. I mean, hell, I'll be the first one to admit it. I was one of the ones saying that the Heat was the better team and that they just didn't want it. But when to hear Mark Cuban break that down, break down how they scouted them, how they prepared for, how Rick Carlisle, the coach of the Mavericks, who didn't get enough credit, by the way, for out-coaching the hell out of Spoelstra. During the during that series, I mean, they basically executed a game plan to almost damn near perfection the last four, the last few games of this series. And to hear him just say, I remember to this day, he say, "What do you guys do? I mean, it's not that hard. you're just talking about shit that we all saw."
I kind of for once agreed with the Ram there. For those who don't know, Stephen A. Smith went to San Jose State. So, you know, I always kind of pick with him about that. But, he said basically, you know, how is it that you guys know this, but no other NBA analysts, including coaches, could not pick that out? There's a problem. But at the same time, they also have the ability, and he's been taught by other great NBA coaches, Donnie Nelson and to be one of them, on how to look at game film and analyze it.
Right.
So you really can't blame Mark Cuban for what he said, but at the same time, I also believe that a lot of these analysts haven't been taught how to properly watch game film. But at the same time, a lot of them are very lazy and saying the exact same things over and over again.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's easy to be a talking head and say that LeBron got shook. That's the too easy of an analysis. Everyone knew that he would get shook. But the thing is, do you know why? What led Miami to play a certain way? What did Dallas do right? You know, that takes true analysis. That's breaking down film. That's what... You know, like people like what's his name? Oh, God dang it. There's the other NBA analyst on ESPN who's actually pretty good. Not Jalen Rose. He's a former ball, but it's not Jalen Rose. It's not the Barry Boy. His name is he was a former Washington Bullet, actually.
I know exactly who you're talking about. You're talking about point guard. What is his name? I see his face.
He was a three-point shooter.
Three-point shooter, yes. God, I was about to say Mark Price, but it's not him. Oh, my God, I see it.
That's what frustrates the hell out of me.
It bothers me as well, being a Wizards fan. And, yes, I did say I am a Wizards fan. I will probably with that flag.
Douglas.
John, who is this guy? Look, the listeners know who we're referring to. But yeah, he's
think of it.
He's a fantastic analyst. I don't know if he'll be willing to go into coaching, but yes, he's a great analyst.
Yeah, he's a damn good analyst. I mean, I play a little research here, or you can play a little research here. It doesn't matter. But at any rate, the point being that I like how he breaks down film when he's on like the first take set. You know, he really does a wonderful job of breaking it down and whatnot. So I'll find his name later, but I just ask you to talk about the finals.
I'm trying to find it myself later as well.
I know it's gonna hit me as soon as the talk. Tim Legler.
That's right. Tim Legler. Yes.
Tim Legler. It's on the tip of my damn tongue. I know that cat's name. I know his name. But I mean, the point being that guys like him and to extent Jalen Rose as well, they look at the film, the breakdown, strategies of what happened. You know, it's more meat and teeth in that analysis, if you will. So the point that Mark Cuban was saying was that, you're just doing barbershop talk. I mean, talk about strategies, how you broke down, how you break down the tape and notice what Dallas did right. But anyway, that's a few years ago, but we're not going to worry about that now. But still, that was just good, awesome theater by Mark Cuban. More props to him. So going forward, what in your mind does Miami have to do to prevent going down 3-1?
LeBron has to come out and be a leader. He has to do what he said he needs to do earlier today. I think he made a comment along the lines of he needs to take more control of what happens with this team. And I guess in terms of scoring, I didn't see the entire article, but I did see the quote where he made a comment along the lines of, it's time for me to take over. And truthfully, in order for them to win this series, I feel as though he needs to score at least 25 for the remainder of the series in order for them to take the series.
Right. And the thing is, he needs to show. Right. And he needs to show that he's the fourth, he's not the time MVP for nothing. He needs to show it. He needs to show it. I mean, the talent that he has, I mean, dude, he's 6'9", damn near 280 pounds, muscle bound, mostly if not all muscle, and can do everything on the floor, can play all five positions. I mean, it's kind of like seeing Magic Johnson all over again. But the thing is,
stronger
he's not
to get that
to his advantage.
Yes. And
the thing is, I mean, he has no business not going to the line fewer than 10 times a game. I mean,
of course.
He needs to practice ass down on the block, get those shots and fouls over, get some dunking the fouls over by driving at him. I mean, he's the strongest dude on the court.
By far.
Yeah, I mean, why is he selling for jumpers? Why is he on the perimeter? Why is he not getting those cats in the foul trouble?
I have no idea. I mean, it just appears as though that, his name just escaped me that quickly. The small forward that's playing with the Spurs.
We talking about Kawhi. Good is the last name. Kawhi, the kid. Kawhi. Shit, I don't know.
that guy.
Yeah, I think it's Kawhi. I forgot his last name. But he's the main guy guarding LeBron.
Yes, and he's been doing a pretty good job of doing so.
Yeah, and he has. To his credit, he has. I mean, he's lucky that LeBron's not posting him up more. But, I mean, I guess he's the strongest guy that San Antonio has. And to match up with LeBron, I just think that LeBron just needs to get him in the foul trouble. And, because, I mean, San Antonio has decent depth. I mean, the depth is better than Miami's, in my opinion. But they need to force senatorial to use the desk, if you know what I mean. You know, they need to force it on him. They can't. I mean, he can't sell for outside jumpers. He can't be doing it anymore. He needs to take his behind down there and get Kawhi Leonard in foul trouble, get Tim Duncan in a little bit of foul trouble, and, you know, and just neutralize him that way. I mean, they don't have – San Antonio does not have an answer for LeBron. Hell, no one does. But
no
particularly
one.
In this series, they do not, and he just needs to take advantage of that.
Because, God forbid, San Antonio wants Diego Sitter or Dwan Blair having to cover this guy down low. It'll be an issue. So, yes, what he needs to do is attack more closer to the basket and get these guys in foul trouble and get them in foul trouble early so that San Antonio has to go to their backup four or fives early and have Miami just create issues for them for the remainder of the game.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. But think of the Thiago Splitter. How about that block? How about that block? I mean, I know Skip Bayless in his typical hater fashion downgraded the block because that's his guy, Thiago Splitter, as Stephen A. Smith is saying. but the thing is how did you not get hype when you saw LeBron just the way he blocked that dude's dunk? I mean, granted, he may not be the biggest dude in the world, but he's over 7 feet tall. That 7 foot is not supposed to get blocked like that. Not supposed to get put like that on the dunk.
Not supposed to. But
right.
Remember.
Right, yeah.
He still is Thiago Splitter. Now.
There you go.
I'm sorry, man. You know, but that has been, you know, it has been an all-star big man, and he did that to them, okay, I would have gotten a little bit more hype. Don't get me wrong, I love to see dunks blocked. But when the blockee is on a lower plane in terms of status in the league, of the blocker,
sure.
I don't get as hype. I mean, I get a little hype, but I don't get as hype. Plus, you know, sorry to say, I am a LeBron hater. That just goes back once again. I am a Wizards fan, and it goes back to that the Cleveland Wizard playoff series days.
The Shawn Stevenson get in his grill, and Gilbert Arenas get into his grill, and you still have a good LeBron from Cleveland days.
Oh my God, the infamous crab step.
Was it 2 years in a row? 3 years in a row? You guys faced them in the playoffs?
Yeah, it was 3 years in a row, yeah. In both years, it was rather ugly. Rather ugly. No.
Right.
Okay, once again, we just didn't have an answer for LeBron, as many teams don't. So,
Great.
I'd give it a B-. If I was grading that block, I'd give it a B-.
There you go. Well, that's fair. That's fair. But to hear Skip Bayless say the ball was slipping out of his hands when he got a block.
I say this to that. You know what? If the ball's slipping out of your hand, it's time to go ahead, bring that ball down, and do some kind of scoop layup or something. You know, if you lose control,
in the
roll,
or something,
you know.
Ball coming in saying, shut the hell up, Skip Bayless. All right. Actually, a couple more things on the NBA Finals. Who do you have, who did you have before the Finals started winning and how many games? Just curious.
And also the fact that Miami's in the Southeast Division with my Wizards, I did have San Antonio in six, and I'm sticking to my guns. I do expect to see Miami come out with at least one of the games in San Antonio. If not this one, game five for sure.
Right.
If they do it in game four, it makes the series a little bit more interesting. But, if they don't, I do see at least them winning game 5, taking it back to Miami, and San Antonio winning game 6.
Mm. You know what?
So,
San Antonio is a great road team, excuse me. They're a better road team than our home team.
Yes.
You know, having said that, I'll be honest with you, before the series, I had Miami 6. I'm beginning to look more idiotic, especially after game 3. I'm like, what in the hell, man? What is this? But I'm sticking with it. I'm thinking that they're going to come out and win. They being the Miami Heat. They're going to come out and win game 4. I'm thinking they're going to take game 4. If they don't take game 4, it's over. I mean, even though they got one more game in San Antonio, they'll be behind the 8-ball, and I'm not sure how they're going to respond. San Antonio's pressure. But I think they're going to win game 4, and game, which makes game 5 hellified interesting. Hellified interesting.
Exactly. And like I said before, son of a statistician, there's certain things that have caught my eye as the series went on. One of the stats, I didn't hear anyone say it. So I'm going to say that I was the first to say it. Whenever a team wins game 1, 70% of the time they win the series. That's number one.
Right. Right.
Number two, I noticed something that was very interesting, especially when it comes to the Michael Jordan, LeBron James comparison, whenever people like to throw that out there in terms of greatness, quote unquote. I find it interesting that in LeBron's NBA Finals career, and in the, what's that, they went 6 against San Antonio when he was in Cleveland. They went
right
6 against Dallas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
they got swept by San Antonio, though. I thought they got swept by San Antonio.
Well, yeah, 4 against San Antonio, 6 against Dallas, 10 and 5 against Oklahoma. So in the 15 games that he played in the NBA Finals in his career, he has scored under 20 5 times. So that's the third of his NBA Finals career he scored under 20. Michael Jordan, in his 179 games of playing in the playoffs, he scored under 25 times.
Damn.
So I'm just saying, so you know, jump on my back, I will lead you there. So LeBron, if you're listening, take note.
Got a chance.
Tell him to get on your back and you know, 6 rings maybe. But I'm just saying, you know, it's just weird that people like to throw out that comparison because, of course, if you watch his game, he is more of a distributor. I mean, he is a great player, just like Jordan. They both transcend the game. But to compare the two games is completely different. And the numbers point to it, especially when it comes to the NBA Finals. There's no way in the world, in my opinion, that the greatest player or the league MVP should be scoring under 20 points in an NBA Finals game.
Right.
Jordan has never done it. Never done it. And I think 2 out of the 5 times that he scored under 20 in his playoff career, oddly enough, was his year back into the playoffs for the first time when they played against Orlando. And then, like, another time was, like, early on in his career, and then I forget what the other two were. But, yeah, Mike has never scored a 20 in the NBA Finals game. LeBron, 5 already.
Damn. And you know what? I mean, he gets compared to Magic. He being LeBron gets compared to Magic a lot. Hell, even Magic took the big shots in some games. I remember that game in Boston, because I'm an old guy and all. But I remember the game in Boston, like,
you
in the 80s. Dude, I'll be 40 years old this year. I'm old, trust me, I'm old. But was it 86? Hell, was it 86? When Magic had that iconic sky hook that won the game, with game 4 or 5 in Boston? You know, when the play was actually supposed to go to Kareem. But then, you know, Magic just took Madison's own hands, literally, and made the hook shot over 3 guys with a few seconds left, which gave them the win and led in the series. So, I mean, even Magic balled out.
And that's another situation where you tell one of the greatest centers of all time, hey, jump on my back. I got this. And he took the bottle shot.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have onions, you got to have courage, you got to have stones.
Exactly.
I mean,
speaking of old NBA finals.
Okay.
I was like, speaking of old NBA finals, don't you miss the days of 120 to 113 when it comes to NBA finals?
Who are you telling? Who are you telling? Who are you telling? I mean, back when defense was optional.
Yes, dude, I mean,
remember the Boston Massacre where Boston beat LA in game one, what was it, 144 to 101 or something like that? They just curb stomped the Lakers in game one. I mean, you don't see it anymore. You rarely see that, I should say.
Not at all, and especially not in NBA final games. That's what made the Golden State San Antonio series so fun to me.
Yeah,
because it was kind of along those lines with the high scoring games, but in the NBA finals, you just won't see that anymore.
Yeah, but that started in the 90s. When street ball became acceptable in the NBA, when guys would drive the lane to get leveled by like Charles Barkley or Charles Oakley and the Davis boys in Indiana.
Ooh. Wow. Yes.
That was brutal. I loved it, but it was brutal. So one last NBA tidbit before we move on a little bit. Two more things.
Okay.
Do you think like the injury to Tony Parker? I know he strained his hamstring. It's not a tear, thankfully for him. But do you think that it will limit him in Game 4? And if so, then what would Senator, in your mind, off the cuff, you all need to do to actually push through?
It would have to be the play of Gary Neal again. If he does have an issue where he's hampered. Not only in game four, but for the remainder of the series, they're going to have great play either from Gary Neal again, or they're going to need for Tim Duncan to step up again and score over 20. Tim Duncan scored over 20 once this series. That was game one. in game one, where he scored 21. But they really haven't had to rely on Tim Duncan this entire series or their big men. It's been the play of Tony Parker, Danny Green, and Gary Neal, and they played extremely well. And to some degree, you had some Manu Ginobili sightings as well. But if Tony Parker, and I find it shocking that he actually is coming off the bench and that Danny Green is starting. But I guess they're just looking for some energy so they can have someone to play up with the speed of the Heat. But they're going to have either fabulous play from Gary Neal again or for the remainder of the series or from Tim Duncan.
Mm. Is it just me or is my man Greg Popovich just coaching circles around Eric Spoelstra right now?
Well, I'm not too surprised, but not at all. Once again, it goes back to that whole comment that that Mark Cuban said that Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley, they have a style of coaching that they do not divert from. They play that way, and they will continue to play that way, win, lose, or draw. And if you can outplay them that way, then so be it. And I love the comments from Greg Popovich going into the fourth quarter where he wouldn't basically divulge what his game plan was to finish up the game. We gave the one-word answers. I thought those were fantastic. But, the Spurs get very little respect. For those of you who do follow you on Facebook, for those of you who don't, you need to. You asked a question earlier this week about between the Lakers and the Spurs over the past decade and a half, who's been the better team and why. I think I was probably one of the only people who responded and said the Spurs towards the latter, within the past 10 years, I think the Spurs. But, of course, if you go before about the years before that, there's no way in the world you can top Shaq, Kobe, and those Laker teams led by Phil Jackson. But you start talking about 2003 to now, I lean a little bit more towards the Spurs. Yes, sure, the Lakers have made it to more finals, but they're 2-2 in those finals. The Spurs so far are 2-0. And if you look at the teams they backed up against in the finals, the Lakers lost to the Pistons. What was that, 2003?
Yes. Yes. And I remember that to the day. Yes.
And the Spurs ended up beating that same Pistons team the year later.
Right.
I'm just saying,
right.
You know. And also, if you look at the amount of money that the Lakers spend in comparison to the amount of money that the Spurs spend, that's about another $30 million. I mean, I would hope if you spend $100 million on your team annually that you would have a great ball team. But I'm just saying, you know, when you outspend other teams, you would hope that these teams would be better. It doesn't always pan out, but, you know, I'm not too surprised when you spend $100 million and you win the title. I'm not.
Right. Yeah, it's just like the Yankees winning it. And by the way, I'm a huge Yankees fan, but that's like the Yankees winning it in Major League Baseball. They're supposed to. If they spend all that damn money, you're supposed to. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you know, it's great for that fan base when they do win. But when they do win, I'm not surprised. When I see someone who doesn't spend a lot of money and they win, you know, I'm a little bit more excited. I love seeing the underdog do it. I love seeing the guys. I'm not going to call them cheap. I'm going to say the guys who are actually able to find good talent and spend less money for it. When you see those guys win, it just makes it a little bit more exciting for me.
Right, exactly. So I lied to you when I said that I had two more things to say about the NBA. Make that one more thing. But basically, Jason Kidd become the coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Now, I know that you don't want to go to the – that's why I said. I mean, I know that you don't want to go the retread route, but dude never coached on any level. I mean, does this – being that the Brooklyn Nets are begging for attention that bad over the Knicks, I mean, what's up
with that? That's number one, that's messed up for you to say as a Knicks fan. Number two, I'm going to have to agree with you that yes, they are. I mean, I don't really – but this is just me. I really haven't seen much from Jason Kidd to think that he will be a NBA-level coach. That's just me. At the same time, I didn't believe that they're just going the route or following this trend, especially over the past 10 years, of hiring former players as NBA coaches. I mean, some instances it worked, and other instances it hasn't. I just find it interesting where they fired a former player coach in Avery Johnson just a couple of years ago, who actually won an NBA title as a player, and then he came close as a coach, but they bring on this unknown in this unknown entity in Jason Kidd. With a team who I feel as though is actually pretty good. They're not Miami Heat great, but they're a pretty good team. I think if they can continue to develop and add a piece or two, they can actually contend for an NBA title, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, you know what? The Nets, it's not like the Nets don't have talent. They have talent. And I actually like Brook Lopez as a center. You know, I do like him as a center. It's kind of hard to tell those cats. This is just year one of Williams, Joe Johnson, and Brook Lopez and company. You know, but I think they'll be better next year. But it just remains to be seen with Jason Kidd, though.
Very. And man, I think the most interesting part of this hiring would be the dynamics between Jason Kidd and Deron Williams. That would be the thing to watch. Because Williams has a propensity of getting great coaches fired, But and once again, I hope that a Wizards owner is listening right now. Can you please bring in Jerry Sloan to DC, please? But my God, but yeah, for him to get Jerry Sloan fired, this is a guy who's basically taken teams that have had marginal talent at best and have turned them all into playoff teams, and you get him fired and oh God, get sent to New Jersey. You end up getting a decent team put together, and then you end up getting who was the guy who was actually just ousted as the Nets head coach? I can't remember who it was.
Well, the last guy was the PJ Colissimo.
Remember, PJ was a replacement.
Well, because, yeah, that's Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson was the guy first.
That's right, Avery Johnson. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson got fired last year. But, yeah, even to have PJ fired, PJ, in my opinion, is still a pretty good coach. It was a great assistant in San Antonio. But to have those guys replaced, once again, by unknown, and to have these guys on that team, they're going, like I said before, they're going to have to add someone. And I know that the owner is willing to spend money. So it'll be interesting to see what they do this offseason in terms of making moves. And also, like I said before, that dynamic with Ron Williams and to see how long he may or may not be able to stomach Jason Kidd, or if Jason Kidd is going to be one of those coaches that just allow his players to do what they want.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see. Let me just mix in – that's going to be a new idea for blog post, no way. But let me just mix in a little NFL right quick, because it's this guy, this young man by no fault of his own, it's the gift that keeps on giving. That's Tim Tebow. Now, I'm one of those guys, even though I'm not down with Tebow mania, I think it's nauseating, and I think ESPN just drives it to a whole nother level, which is, makes it even
–
it's almost like a Tebow-gasm. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I like the move. I like New England picking him up, though. I think it's a win-win for both because, you know, Tim Tebow, he's now in the pressure to start. After all, he's playing behind Tom Brady. So, and plus, he can learn behind Tom Brady. Bill Belichick will get the best out of Tim Tebow. He has a support, he being Tim Tebow, has a support system that he never had since Josh McDaniels left town in Denver. Josh McDaniels is the all coordinator in New England. So I think he's in a good situation. Again, doesn't have the pressure to perform. And plus, Bill Belichick, or Belichick as I call him, will put the brakes on Tebow mania. And, I think that's good for everyone involved.
Yes, very much so. Now, you have to remind me, this will be Tebow's third year coming into the season, correct?
Yeah, let's see. He was in Denver two seasons. He was in New York last season. But it would be technically a sport, but close enough.
Okay, yeah, because I couldn't remember whether or not he spent a year or 2 years in Denver, so it was two. Okay.
Yeah, two years in Denver, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember who said it, but after Tim Tebow's second year, and Elway came in as president for the Broncos, and they were talking about trading him and where he should potentially go. I can't remember who said it, but whoever it was is either Nostradamus or a genius. Because what they said was the best place for Tim Tebow to go would be a place like New England. Because of the exact same you just said, he wouldn't have the pressure to perform. He would come in into a situation they already know who the quarterback is.
Mm-hmm.
There's no quarterback controversy. You don't have to worry about the talks of Tim Tebow ousting the potential starter or whoever the starter is. He would basically come into a situation, have the opportunity to get better. If he gets better, great. If he doesn't, they cut him. They don't lose anything big. But at the same time, he does have the opportunity to come in, learn, be in an organization that's not messy, and learn from a coach that a very good coach, regardless of if he cheated or not.
Right.
And go ahead and have the opportunity to and have the opportunity to develop. He just, you know, he'll, and what was it? Ryan Mallett is the guy he'll basically be competing with for that number two
right.
spot. Another guy who has basically just been sitting there and in the wings and just been learning. But that'll be an interesting. Well, no, it won't. I already know that Mallett is probably a better quarterback. But at the same time, you
right.
know, it also gives New England an opportunity to test packages. You know, Belichick likes to tinker from time to time in terms of showing the world how smart he is, quote unquote, when it comes
to
doing certain things. And you know, it just gives him an opportunity every now and again to play a package. Or it's a possibility to see if this guy is actually willing to be a football player and see if this
right.
guy will come in and play position. That would be interesting. To see if Tebow comes out and plays either tight end or fullback.
Hmm. That's interesting.
And then this is another way for Bill Belichick to stick it to the Jets.
Exactly. That's what I thought it was. I mean, the thing is, in Belichick, the Belichick, he is a strong enough head coach to withstand the media pressure of Tebow Mania. I like the fact that he put the kibosh. He's putting the kibosh.
Yes.
On Tebow Mania. I love that. Like I said, I have nothing against him, Tebow. I think he has a future in the NFL. I really do. I thought that the Jets did him a raw deal. But at the same time, people who behind Tebow Mania need to shut the bleep up, keep it moving,
yeah.
and just let Tim Tebow work, continue to work hard and earn it for himself. And I think this would be the ideal situation for him. Personally, I thought it was going to happen to Jacksonville because you can't tell me that Blaine Gabbert is better than Tim Tebow. That's just me. You can't tell me that he's better than Tim Tebow. But that's just me. I mean, plus, his name is Blaine. So, you know, you can't get the quarterback name Blaine. But at any rate, I think Tim Tebow will do well in New England. Who knows? Maybe after a year or two, maybe he'll resurface and have a chance to be a starter elsewhere. So
very
it's too early
very
to put the end of Tim Tebow's career.
You and me both, I think that this is his last chance and his last opportunity to show
yeah.
that he can play. And I hope he makes the best of this opportunity so that he can at least show another team that he is capable of playing in this league. Because there's
yeah.
no way in the world you can tell me that a guy, regardless of what happened in New York, there's no way in the world you can tell me that a guy who played as well as he played his last year in Denver, who was able to lead a team. I'm not going to say he played well. I changed that because, of course, his passing numbers were horrific. But he played well enough. He was able to lead a team to, seven wins in his play?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way in the world you can't tell me that this guy is not an NFL caliber athlete.
Right. And you know what? I was going to say, he made a believer out of me when he beat my Steelers in the wild card playoffs. He made a believer out of me then. He made a believer out of me. It was bad enough they finished 7-4 that season as a starter. But the way, and granted, I mean, I could say that our defensive coordinator, Dick LeBeau, should change his game plan a little bit, you know, after Tebow was hitting guys in man coverage. But Tebow made the throws. And he started gaining confidence as the game progressed. And the dude can play. He can play.
Sure.
It's just that he needs someone who's chosen support and patience and works with him. And he'll be all right. He'll be just fine, he'll be just fine. But Wayne, man, we should have done this shit a long time ago, man. But I appreciate you coming in, picking a brother up, and picking me up, and actually contributing to this podcast. We're gonna do several more when it's all said and done, my man.
That'll be fantastic. Number one, actually, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity. For years, I will admit I have been rather hesitant in terms of doing podcasts. But I see exactly how enjoyable it is, and it would be great to be doing more podcasts with you in the future.
You got it, brother. And plus, like, you know, like I said, college football around the corner. HBCU is going to get that thing, doing homecoming and whatnot. And, of course, you're a Redskins fan, so we're going to talk Redskins later on in training camp. So we got a whole lot of shit before you, my man.
Oh, my
God.
A
whole lot of stuff before you.
This whole preseason with my Skins has been a very interesting one. And, yeah, we're all there for week one. But college football, I'm waiting for this season. In terms of HBCU football, it's going to be very interesting.
Right.
I want to see what happens in the NBAC, especially with our Aggies. They're making a slow turnaround. I want to see what happens with the changes with Howard University. I also want to see what happens with the changes at Florida A&M. For those who aren't familiar, they've lost their great coach and have replaced him with NFL great and actually former Florida A&M Rattler, Earl Holmes. So that'll be interesting to see what they do in their first year with him at the helm. But I can't wait. That old quote from your former Steeler, I can't wait, man. I can't wait.
All right, man. He's a full Raven, too, but I won't hold that against him. But hey, man, thanks a lot, my man. I'll talk to you real soon, all right?
No problem, Scott. Thanks so much.
You got it. That's my man, Dwayne Nash, from the Yard, HBCU Sports. Check him out. Google him. He's worth the wait, man. That was a lot of fun. That was a whole lot of fun. Shit, I could easily go another hour with him. But like I said, I'll have him for subsequent podcasts for the upcoming season. But for now, I'm out of time. So I want to thank you all for tuning in to the Clown Hour. Once again, I'm Scott Burks, and until next time, take care.